Come to order. Will the members please show their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll?
Excuse me, 35 present.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Phillips is excused from the call of the House till 10 or playing time tonight, and I notice Representative Parker is here, but he is also excused.
The prayer today is by Reverend McNabb of the Douglas Methodist Church. Will the members please rise for the prayer today?
Let us pray. Oh God, our Father, we need your power obtained through prayer to solve problems and decide issues and to do your will. But let us not imagine that this formal prayer can take the place of private petitions. May there arise from each desk a silent prayer that seeks to know your will. We need such guidance to know the right and the power to do it. We would not avoid the discipline of hard thinking, but deliver us, O God, from that thinking that leads to wrong conclusions. Be present in our every need, we pray, for we acknowledge our dependence upon you. Amen.
Will the record please show that Representative Meekins is present today? Representative Miller. There's no objection. The prayer will be spread on the journal. Will the Chief Clerk please certify as to the correctness of the previous day's journal?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 16th day and House Supplement Number 6.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 16th day and the House Supplement Number 6 be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
If there's no objection, the journal and the journal supplement stand approved. The guest for introduction today, Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Gallery B, I see a constituent of Representative Montgomery and myself, our good Mayor George Sullivan and his lovely wife, Margaret.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A today, we have two members of the Alaska Association of Realtors. Their president, Loretta Sokol, and a member of their board, Joan Shepherd.
Representative Bettisworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have in Gallery A a distinguished Fairbankson, a longtime member of the faculty of the University of Alaska, and a good friend of mine and others from Fairbanks, Bill Cashin.
Are there Representative O'Connell?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the gallery behind me, some friends from the Kenai Peninsula, from Kenai in particular, Mr. and Mrs. Mueller.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, I'd like to introduce a young lady from my district, a good friend of several people here on the floor, Jo Putman. She runs a Head Start program in Nome.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B is a long time, a very good friend of mine and constituent of those of us from Fairbanks, Charlie Thomas, here for the Realtor Board.
Are there further guests for introduction? Messages, Representative Munson.
In Gallery B, we have a constituent of Jack Fuller's from Nome, his daughter. Dana. I'm sorry, I misintroduced the wrong person.
I only got two, but I'll accept another one.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, A new friend of mine from Washington, D.C., legal counsel of the AARP, Mr. Mulholland.
Messages from the governor.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the President appointed the following members to the Ombudsman Selection Committee to meet with a like committee from the House. Senator Curtula, Chairman, Senator Meehan, Senator Bennett. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Judiciary has had House Joint Resolution 54 relating to the ratification of the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 54 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Phillips, O'Connell, Anderson, Barnes, Brown, Parr, and Buchholz, having no recommendation, Martin and Malone. House Joint Resolution 54 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs is at House Bill 154, creditable service under the teacher's retirement system for territorial employment, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Eliason, Parker, Gardner, and Fuller. Signing do not pass, Metcalf and Martin. House Bill 154 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 517, a special appropriation to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development for grants to the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 517 and recommends do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Chatterton, Eliason, Carney, Jaroff, Osterbach, Halford, and Fuller. Having no recommendation, Miles. House Bill 517 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is at House Bill 594, a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for health, careers, education, and providing for an effective date, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parker, Chairman, concurred in by Parker, O'Connell, and Branson. Having no recommendation, Metcalf and Parr. House Bill 594 has a further referral to finance. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports to special committees.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation in memoriam Martin Severson, a former legislator, by Representative Anderson. House Concurrent Resolution 44 by Randolph, Barnes, Bettesworth, Malone, Montgomery, O'Connell, and Phillips, opposing the creation of the Alaska General Stock Ownership Corporation.
State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 637 by Parr, an act relating to the purchase of services by the state for persons under its responsibility and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance.
House Bill 638 by the Special Committee on Roads and Highways, an act relating to transportation planning and reports.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 639 by Munson, Branson, and Buchholz. An act authorizing the Superior Court to request reports by the Department of Health and Social Services in legal proceedings involving the welfare of children.
Judiciary.
House Bill 640 by Moss, Anderson, Bettesworth, Branson, Carney, Fuller, Guy, Hurlburt, Metcalf, Montgomery, Osterbach, Phillips, Schaefer, and Jaroff. An act making a special appropriation to the Alaska Power Authority for a study of hydroelectric development in the Tanana area and providing for an effective date.
CRA and Finance.
House Bill 641 by Jaroff, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for a grant to the senior citizens of Kodiak Incorporated and providing for an effective date.
CRA and Finance.
House Bill 642 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for airport construction at Sand Point and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 643 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for transportation facilities for cities and villages of Kodiak Island, the Alaska Peninsula, and the Aleutian Islands, and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 644 by Rogers, Anderson, Buchholz, Barnes, Byrne, Bettesworth, Carney, Freeman, Fuller, Halford, Hayes, Hurlburt, Metcalf, Miles, Moss, Munson, O'Connell, Parr, and Randolph. An act creating the Alaska Statehood Commission and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary and Finance.
House Bill 645 with a letter by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act transferring an appropriation to the Alaska Power Authority for costs associated with the Tyee Lake Hydroelectric Project and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Randolph.
I'd like to request that the House Concurrent Resolution 34 lay on the desk for an hour in case anyone else would like to get on it. I didn't have a chance to talk to everybody. It's the bill, the resolution having to do with opposition to the AGSOC proposal.
HCR, is it 33?
I thought it was 34.
44. HCR 44 will 44. Be held on
Thank
the
you.
Chief Clerk's desk 1 hour after adjournment. Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. The clerk, please read the first item on today's calendar.
House Bill number 411 by Parker, Byrne, Buchholz, Barnes, and Munson. An act prohibiting sex discrimination in education in the state and implementing Article 1, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution. The Committee on HES has had House Bill 411 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 411 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Buchholz, Chairman, concurred in by Munson, Barnes, Buchholz, Byrne, and Chatterton. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 411 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 411 Judiciary and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, signing do pass, Buchholz, ERA supporter, Anderson, Martin, Barnes, Parr, and Malone. Having no recommendation, Phillips, signing do not pass, O'Connell. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill number 411 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Is this for the purpose of explanation?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, for the purpose of explanation.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are only two major changes. On page 3 of the Judiciary Committee substitute, members will look at line 7 carrying over into line 8. The committee added the statement, nothing in this section prohibits use of literary classics. In other words, Mr. Speaker, even if someone might consider Tom Sawyer sex discriminatory, they couldn't prohibit it being used in schools. And then, Mr. Speaker, if the members will look at page 4 of the bill, the original bill called for 3 steps that the state school board could take in enforcing a non-sex discriminatory policy. And they were simply 1, 2, and 3, and they could take any one or all 3 of those. However, the Judiciary Committee said that they would take steps 1 and 2, and then beginning at line 4, that the board had to make a finding that those 2 steps had been ineffective. First, that the district had not complied. Secondly, that those steps 1 and 2 had been ineffective, and only then could take the step 3, which was the real hammer, and that would be holding back on the funds. So those are the changes made by the Judiciary Committee.
Is there further objection? There's no objection. The Judiciary Committee substitute, House Bill 411, will be adopted. Are there amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill number 411 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's no objection. Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 411 will be engrossed, advanced third reading, and placed on final passage. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 411, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act prohibiting sex discrimination in education in the state and implementing Article 1, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill parallels Title IX of the Federal Code outlawing sex discrimination in education in the state. It, in fact, has passed this House a couple of years ago, so it'll be familiar, I know, to many of you, but let me run through it quickly so that we know exactly what we're voting on. The purpose section, of course, explains that it should be against state law for anyone to discriminate against any employee or student in the education system in the state. The employment section spells out that there should be no difference in the conditions of employment for any of the teachers or administrators in the schools in this state, and the same opportunities for advancement should exist for men and women alike. In the Counseling and Guidance Services section, it prohibits counselors or guidance counselors from recommending career possibilities of one sex over the other, so that, for example, if somebody were interested in medicine, they would be given the choice of explaining that they would have a choice of becoming either a doctor or a nurse, say, whether they were male or a female student. In the discrimination in the athletic activities section provides that either separate teams will be sponsored for each sex in the sports in which teams are fielded, or that in school districts in which only one team is fielded, members of students of either sex would be allowed to try out for that team. In districts where separate teams are fielded for each sex, boys and girls basketball, for example, it requires that equal time at the gymnasium and equal uniforms and equipment and so forth will be provided, and that the State Board of Education or the Board of Regents, in the case of the university, will provide surveys for the students so they can determine how many of the kids, either boys or girls, are interested in which activities. The discrimination in course offerings section prohibits any discrimination between students in courses that are offered, with the exception of sex education, in which it is still lawful to provide separate classes for boys and girls there, or in phys ed classes in which the major activity involves bodily contact. That means that this bill would not require, for example, intramural football, in which all of the boys and girls of the school were required to play in a common game. Discrimination in textbooks is prohibited, and the board should review each 3 years of textbooks to make sure that there are no sexually discriminating books still left in the system. The compliance section requires that guidelines for affirmative action programs for both equal employment and equal educational opportunity will be adopted by all the districts and REAAs. And the enforcement by the State Board of Education includes a sequential system here. First, if it is found by the State Board that one school district or the other is discriminating, whether against the teachers or the students in their district because of sex, the board would step in first and offer a mandatory affirmative action program to them, and institute appropriate proceedings to stop the sex discriminating practices. And then, if that didn't work, the board would have the right to withhold state monies being given to the district until they did come into line with the affirmative action programs. The bill, as I said, has passed this House before, and it does parallel the federal code. It is not a radical change in the way we do business, but it is a guarantee that every student and employee of the school district, whether male or female, will have an equal chance, I think it's little to ask for the people of this state.
Representative Guy. House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. We are in third reading. Representative Guy.
I thank you, Mr. Speaker. I feel relatively assured of the particular provision in the bill, adopted bill, to which I'm going to speak. On page 4, there's a subsection B, which speaks to district and regional educational attendance areas. And the attendant funding that go to them. I would like an explanation, Mr. Speaker, as to as to the non-compliance provision of the bill and the rationale behind partial or full termination of the foundation program funds and any other funds. Thank you.
Representative Parker.
Mr. Speaker, good question. If the State Board of Education, upon getting a complaint that a school district was outside the law in this area, was discriminating by sex against the students or employees of its district, a hearing would be held and a finding made whether or not the district was in fact outside the law. If they were not, of course, the matter would be dropped. If they were, then a mandatory affirmative action plan would be offered by the State Board of Education to the district to explain to them how they could come into compliance with the law. And if it were necessary, the State Board would have the power under this law to institute appropriate proceedings. That means, I guess, to do whatever is necessary to bring that district into conformance with the law as far as sex discrimination inside that district. Then, Mr. Speaker, if that local district still refused to comply with the state law, the State Board of Education would have the power to withhold some or all of this of the state monies being given to that district through the State Foundation Act to support education in that district. It's I guess, like a court of last resort. If the district found itself outside the law, at the hearing held by the State Board of Education, refused to come into conformance with the law by themselves, if they refused to institute the plan given to them at that time by the State Board of Education. In other words, if they go through every check and the local district still refuses to comply with the state law, and only if we go through all those checks, then the last resort, as I said, would be to withhold part of their or all of their foundation money. It is the last item in the section, because it is the last thing that we think we should have to do to bring a district in compliance with the law. In fact, we don't. While it's important to have that in there as the ultimate teeth, I guess we don't think it'll ever have to be used. But it is in there in case a district simply refused to comply with the state law.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't see too much of a problem with that, depending on the answer to the next question. It would seem that this is a remedy that might be 1, 2, 3 years down the line, after a repeated series of just violation and flagrant disregard for the law and for the orders of the Department of Education. So presumably it would never be used in almost any foreseeable situation. But in the event that it were necessary for this section to come into play, is there a review available? That is, in the event that an affected district or regional educational attendance area felt that they had been improperly treated by the Department of Education under this section, would they still have a recourse, the appeal of the administrative ruling to the courts in the usual way?
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, as far as I know, any administrative ruling can be appealed to the courts. I yield to Mr. Brown's superior knowledge in the legal field, but as far as I can, I don't know the reason that they couldn't go to court and sue for the money. I suspect that if they did, the burden would be on them to, in a sense, to show that the board had acted arbitrarily. I think anyone who's really familiar with the state school board knows it's not likely to take any very drastic actions, as I've never seen any indication of that.
Representative Smith.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment.
Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Proposed amendment number one by Smith. Page three. Line 4. After materials prohibited, period, delete all material through line 8, classics, period.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Many of you know I used to teach school. It was 10 years ago. And at that time, our textbooks showed all pictures of Caucasian middle-class children frolicking around on the pages of the textbook. I taught in an all-black school. These textbooks are not all going to be changed. I mean, we're in the process of at least integrating the figures within the books. But I found it more important as an educator to explain the biases of the textbook to these children so that they became discriminating readers. It's far more important for us to be exposed to everything about us and know what we're being exposed to and know what the differences are. If you will note, I've left the last sentence, which states, school districts shall offer in-service training programs designed to decrease the damaging effects of sex-biased materials. I think that that's really the meat of this paragraph. If we get into deciding what textbooks a teacher will or will not use or a school district, we're getting into censorship. We're also getting into putting other biases in those materials that we simply cannot take out because the availability to take them out doesn't exist. We're talking about additional expenses, and we're talking about a limited resources then available to the classroom. And what it boils down to is we're not going to accomplish our purpose, which is to reduce sex discrimination. And I would submit to the body that it's far more important to teach a child to know what he's reading, know what the role models are that are being presented, and within the framework of the period that the work was written, than it is to remove those things from his view. Because then when he does see them and is confronted by them, he won't understand them. And I think I would request that the body accept this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, do you wish to debate the amendment itself now or only wait until the motion has been acted on to go back to second reading?
Well, the motion is to return to second reading, so I guess you're really not supposed to debate the amendment, but may be necessary to argue one way or the other about the amendment, so use your own judgment.
Thank you, Speaker.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if... this has just been sort of thrown in there. I'd feel one way about it. Also, if all teachers were like Representative Smith apparently was as a teacher, I might feel differently. But I don't believe that we're going to find that many teachers who are going to do the job that she did in pointing out the bias that exists. Teachers with 25 kids or so and all kinds of problems, maybe a couple of kids in the classroom who have learning handicaps and somebody else who has family problems at home and somebody else who simply has trouble reading, and they've got a lot of problems and they can only do so much. And Mr. Speaker, I might point out that we realized at the time we worked on this bill that a lot of times the unbiased texts are not available. And that's the reason that the language is in there, that they shall be used as they become available. Now, you'll notice also it says that the texts have to be educationally sound. We're not saying that if a best textbook or the better textbooks on a particular subject happen to be sex biased, and all you've got in a non-discriminatory textbook is one that's very poor from a teaching standpoint, that you have to drop it. It has to be educationally sound and non-biased, both is ideal. And as those books become available, the school districts shipped over to them. Now, it's not censorship at part of the state legislature. The local school board is the one that makes those decisions, which they properly should. And obviously, they are going to rely primarily on the advice of the people who know what they're doing, that is the teachers, as to whether a textbook is educationally sound or not. They can look at it themselves probably and see if it's sex bias, but they don't know if it's a good textbook for teaching fourth grade arithmetic. They're going to rely on the teachers to tell them that. So I think we are keeping this in the hands of the teachers, and considering, as I said, the problems that all teachers have, and the fact that not all of them are going to be able to point out this bias to the extent that Representative Smith did, I oppose the amendment.
Representative Parker.
Mr. Speaker, I'd also have to oppose the amendment. The question revolves around where does the, should the decision be made as to whether or not a textbook is sexually discriminating. The bill would provide that that decision be made at the school board level, the local school board level, and Ms. Smith's amendment would make it at the individual teacher level. I think, as Mr. Parr said best, if everybody, every teacher in the state was discriminating as Ms. Smith, we could certainly change the law. But I think because this is a matter of fairly broad policy and other matters of policy are left to the individual school boards, it makes sense to not to pass the amendment and to leave the law as it is.
Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, would you ask the, could I ask the clerk to read that amendment again, please?
Clerk, please read the amendment again.
Amendment number one by Smith, page 3, line 4. After materials prohibited, period, delete all material through line 8, classics, period.
Representative Smith.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the body for all these nice compliments about what a great teacher I was. I'm sorry I couldn't have had you in my class. You know, if I were such a great teacher, you'd be convinced this was the only way to go, right? I would just like to point out once again that I am leaving the last sentence, which dictates the school boards provide in-service training so that these teachers do become qualified to point out the sexual bias and any other discrimination that's in those books. And as I say, this is really the meat of this whole thing. We want our teachers to be able to recognize that that's just super important, and we are dictating that they do. But at the same time, we are trying to take on the authority for the school board, and we are trying to tell the school board what to do, and that's not our role. They are no more equipped to pick out sexual and racial bias than those teachers you say can't do it. Nor are they more qualified to do it than those of us who sit in this body. I think it's far more important, again, that we teach people to recognize bias, not that we limit their reading. It is only through extensive reading that we can begin to pick out where those biases lie. So once again, I implore you, please return to second reading.
Okay, the question for the House is a motion to return to second reading, and after we do, if we do return to second reading, then there will be a chance to debate the amendment and another chance to vote also. Representative Hayes?
Point of clarification, Mr. Speaker, is the motion to return to second reading or to return to second reading for the purpose of making a specific amendment? Because
it's a specific amendment. The motion is to return to second reading for purposes of specific amendment number one. Does take 21 votes to return to second reading. Question for the body is a motion to return to second reading for purposes of adopting specific amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
21 yeas, 16 nays.
The motion is carried. We are in second reading. Clerk, please read the amendment.
Amendment number one by Smith. Page 3, line 4. After materials prohibited period, delete all material through line 8, classics period.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask for adoption of the amendment.
Amendment number one has been moved. Is there debate? Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I guess I have a little difficulty with this for another reason besides the one I stated before. If the bill stands as it is, we try to get non-biased textbooks. We also require the in-service training. Now, the proposed amendment only gives us one of those two things. Mr. Speaker, we are not going to get the unbiased textbooks overnight. And even though the teachers may receive the in-service training, and even though maybe a number of those may try to point out the biases to the students have before them every day the biased textbooks. They take those textbooks home at night, some of them, to do homework. The impression, accumulative impression of the biased textbooks is going to be very difficult for a teacher to counteract. And so I don't see what is gained by removing that and only keeping one of the two tools we have there to use.
Representative Montgomery.
Mr. Speaker, I'd have one question of one of the supporters of the original bill. In that particular section, I would like to know if the way that sentence is structured, would it require a school district to replace books every 3 years? Textbooks are very expensive, and some school districts cannot financially replace them. And as I read it, it says, shall every 3 years if they're available. So my question, I guess, to one of the makers of the original bill would be, if it is passed as is, would a school board have to replace every 3 years if the material was available? That'd be my question.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, unless I've misread this, it doesn't say that they shall replace them every 3 years. It says they shall review them every 3 years, and they replace them as they, because new ones become available. Now, I don't know how long, what the average life of a textbook is in the school system. Mr. Montgomery, I'm sure, is better qualified to state on that. And he's also on the Finance Committee, which is going to approve the budgets so that these school systems can go to non-biased textbooks.
Representative Montgomery.
It does say, and shall use. It says school boards shall review, but then in the line 6 it says, and shall use. So my question sincerely to the makers is, would a school district, if challenged, be forced by this statute to replace that material if someone said there is a non-biased text available? I do not want to detract from the authority of the local board.
Representative Parker.
Mr. Speaker, if a local school board reviewed the textbooks being used in their own schools and found them to be sexually discriminating, then, and there was a another textbook available that was not, then I would say that yes, they would be required by this law, and by something higher than that, I'm sure the board themselves that found that book to be sex discriminating would want themselves to replace it. Now, we're not talking about replacing every school book every 3 years. We're talking about if one is found to be discriminating, that, and there is a better book available, that district would replace it. And I think it makes sense that if the school board did find on their own that it was, that they would want to replace it.
Is there further debate? Representative Freeman.
Hey, we have a brief at ease, please.
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, there's a citation on everybody's desk which
has been added, I guess, as a supplemental calendar, and there's a time problem with it, and it needs to be approved by noon today, or to be at a retirement luncheon by noon today. So I'd move that we take it up as a special order of business now.
If there's no objection, citation will be taken up as a special order of business. Will Chief Clerk please read the citation?
Citation honoring Catherine M. Lloyd, retiring from her position as Deputy Commissioner of the Health and Social Services. Requested by Senate, no, excuse me, by all members of the Senate and by Representatives Chatterton, McKinnon, and Munson.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that this be shown as approved by, sponsored unanimously by this body.
Is there any objection to having the resolution shown as being sponsored by all members of the House? There's no objection. So ordered. Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move the citation.
There's no objection. The citation will be approved by the House. It returns us to where we left off, which was debating amendment number one. Is there further debate on amendment number one? Question before the House is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
13 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number one has been failed to be adopted. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill number 411 be considered in gross advance to third reading and placed on final passage.
There's no objection. The House Bill 411 Judiciary Committee substitute will be moved to third reading, final passage. There are some other amendments on the desk, but since we are in third reading, the members will have to move to return to second reading for adoption of the specific amendment. And then the amendment will be read. Okay. Question for the House is the final passage of House Bill 411. Representative O'Connell.
Mr. Speaker, may we have a brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment.
Would clerk please read specific amendment number two?
Amendment number two by Buchholz and Rogers. Page 3, line 10. Section 14, 18065. Discrimination in the legislature prohibited. Discrimination on the basis of sex in the legislature is prohibited. Membership in the legislature shall be evenly apportioned between men and women. Alternatively, the Senate shall consist of 20 women and the House shall consist of 40 men.
I'll withdraw the amendment.
The motion has been withdrawn. Representative Metcalf.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would like to request that we turn to second reading for the purpose of specific amendment.
Will the clerk please read amendment number three?
Amendment number three by Mr. Metcalf. Page 2, line 18, between the words sexes, a comma, and either, add as needed on a, per capita of interest basis. Is that, did I say that right? As
yes.
Needed on a per capita of interest basis. Page 2, line 21, add a new sentence. A fair division shall reflect per capita student and public interest while ensuring all students' right to participate to a reasonable degree.
Representative Metcalf.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
I find a couple inequities in this piece of legislation, particularly to do with the sports. And part of my reasoning for this is about 12 years ago, as a president of a class in college, I dismantled the athletic system there and put it back together and created the possibility for intramural sports and allowing all people to participate in these sports. And they had the same inequity that existed at that time in a lot of schools, and we corrected that. But in any case, here 12 years later in the legislature, the possibility, the way the bill is written, suggests that equal facilities be built, substantially equal facilities for both sexes be developed. So that creates the possibility that 200 girls might go out for basketball, creating a tremendous amount of interest, and six boys going out for basketball. Now, not that that would be the case, but it could be the case. And these 200 girls require 150 showers. Does that then require that they build 150 showers for the six boys that happen to be interested in basketball also? So I think that is the reason for the first portion of the amendment, that it be on an as-needed. If they're going to provide separate facilities, they don't precisely have to be the same. They have to be substantially convenient, similar in convenience for each group by sex. And page 2, line 21, recognizes the probability that basketball for girls has become a very popular sport, and it's increasing rapidly in interest. And so, therefore, the possibility that 300 girls might go out for basketball does exist. And those 300 girls might start attracting a gate of $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 per year, thereby offsetting their athletic expense requirements. And with the gymnasiums full from that community of people watching the girls play basketball, and the gate would, to some degree, give them, in my own opinion, public interest should give them some priority, and not a complete priority by any means, but some priority over the boys' basketball team in that event, should that be the case, of 10 boys that are drawing a very small crowd, filling 10% of the gymnasium with people and drawing a very small gate. And that's what that is. I think that the bill should recognize those instances could occur, and to some degree create an equity with public interest, although while still providing the right for all people to participate and all students to participate in the program. And in any case, I move the amendment.
The motion is to return to second reading for adoption of specific amendment number 3. Voice vote. There'll be a roll call vote. It takes 21 votes. The motion for the body is the motion to return to second reading for purpose of adoption of specific amendment number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
11 yeas, 24 nays.
The motion has failed. We are in third reading and final passage, Judiciary Committee Substitute, House Bill 411. Is there further debate? Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I want to say a few things about the bill. It really puts me in a dilemma, because the bill purports to be making things more equal and more free. And as a libertarian, that's what I'm supposed to be in favor of. However, the problem is that we have a monolithic government-controlled education system, where there really is very little choice but to send your kids to that particular system. And that causes a substantial amount of problems. For education to be worthy of the word, it has to take place in some sort of free environment. If it doesn't, it becomes indoctrination of a system of the government forcing its ways and its wills upon the people going there. That's the problem we have in this bill. You can't legislate freedom for one person without restricting it for somebody else if they happen to disagree with what you're doing. And I would submit to you, many of the people who are presently using the public education system are going to disagree with this piece of legislation. And their children are going to be exposed to a environment which, if given their choice, they would not send them. I think we've seen the proliferation of private education in this country, in the state, because of restrictive legislation that creates a very formalized, very static environment. We've seen, whether you agree or disagree with it, the option to have prayers in school totally thrown out. The whole Christmas celebration in the so-called public education system anymore is substantially different than it used to be because you can't make references to what Christmas is all about. Many of the finest traditions in this country no longer can be taught in school because it's discriminatory or there's some restrictive legislation such as this piece we have before us this morning has been passed. This bill specifically will hand over to the state a very substantially greater control of community schools than the state presently has. It'll be extremely costly. We have many. We all know about the Molly Hooch case and the cost of creating a large number of additional schools in really small villages. This tacked on top of that is going to make it extremely expensive to comply with what this bill requires. I think it's as I started out my comments, I'm very much in favor of giving every individual as much freedom as humanly possible to live their lives and perform either he or she in whatever way and whatever professions they can. But to force upon every school where the vast majority of kids have to go, this type of legislation, I think, is extremely contrary to what this country is supposed to be all about.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really don't know how prayer in the schools got involved in this because I certainly am in favor of prayer in the schools. I grew up in a small town in Tennessee, and that wasn't so many, many years ago, where certainly we had equal opportunity in sports. I cannot see any state in our nation not providing those same opportunities for girls. It was very simple. The way it was done, we all had an equal period of time that we used the gym facilities, and I see certainly no difference in this bill. Thank you.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, in response to Representative Randolph, it should be pointed out that we do provide in our state constitution that there should be no discrimination on the basis of sex, and all the bill is attempting to do is to carry out that. And I don't think it has anything to do with the freedom he's talking about, except the freedom to discriminate.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I seem to remember that at least a while back the Zebra Party had a platform plank about how there ought to be no public school system at all, even though that doesn't seem to comport with what's in the Constitution of the State of Alaska. So I suppose we should consider the remarks and consider the source.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just have a question for the sponsors. In what role will this bill play with private institutions since there is some computation of monies to a locality on state and on the federal basis as to total youth population and impact and things like that? But the parents still have the choice of sending their children to the private institution. So I'd like to have a clarification, mainly for the record, of how the sponsors look at this bill and its relationship to private institutions. Thank you.
Representative Parker.
Mr. Speaker, the purpose section, 1418.010, spells out that it's employees or students of public education in Alaska.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, in response to the Jackass Party, I do take some exception at Mr. Brown's slurring comments. I just want to register those. And I will refer to him as I just did every time he refers to me as he just did. As to what the Libertarian Party believes on education is, we believe there ought to be freedom in education. And if the public system can compete with private systems on an equal basis, there would be a public system for those folks who wanted it.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before we vote on this, there's one area of concern that I have that I'd like to address for just a second, and that's on page 2, line 11. I think certainly one of the most important parts of the bill is contained right here where it says when separate, starting on line 10, I guess it is, when separate school-sponsored teams are not provided in a particular sport, females and males must be allowed to compete equally for places on the school-sponsored team. I recognize this as an essential part of what the sponsors of this legislation are trying to drive at. But if, for a second, we can put ourselves in the position of a high school football coach or a wrestling coach, we all know that there's no girls football in this state and there's no girls wrestling. If a girl wants to try out for one of these two teams, a coach is going to find it pretty difficult under this legislation to cut her just because she's a girl. Although I don't think anybody would argue that she's not going to make the team in the end result. I suppose I shouldn't make that general statement. I'm liable to get beat on the back of the head by an old gigger. But if you put yourself in the position of the coach, I can see him faced with a dilemma here. By the time he gathers enough factual information to cut the girl, to eliminate her from the team, he's already liable for a lawsuit because she's been injured. I frankly don't know how to address this thing in the bill without weakening it. This was my original concern, or one of my original concerns with it. I don't wish to put too big a hole in the legislation by saying that we have to leave that question open, but I'd like to ask for a brief at ease if I could please try to formulate.
House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I'd have to say that after knocking it around a long time in my mind, I really don't see any out for it. I guess I want to express that as a concern. I support the legislation as it is. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Question for the House is the final passage of Judiciary Committee Substitute for House Bill 411. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll. It was 34 yeas and 2 nays. Judiciary Committee Substitute for House Bill 411 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
May I revert to introduction of guests, please? I don't
Under introduction of guests, Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A behind me is someone I went to high school with who's down here with the Real Estate Board, has been meeting here, has a position with that organization in Anchorage, Jeanette Watkins. She used to be a fine French horn player, by the way.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In order to see if I can improve on my teaching skills, I'd like to reconsider my vote on House Bill 411.
Is
notice of reconsideration is noted by Representative Smith. It completes today's calendar, brings us to unfinished business. Are there any items unfinished business come before the House? Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Branson be excused from the call of the House February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
There's no objection. Representative Branson will be excused on those dates. Might make an announcement to those folks who are interested about an upcoming holiday. We're going to take February 15th off. That's a Friday. And we've got Lincoln's birthday before it and Washington's birthday after it, and that's kind of in the middle. And so is the Fur Rendezvous in Anchorage. So thought it might be some people might want to go home that weekend anyway. But we will take Friday off, and then on Monday, so people can return conveniently, the calendar will be at, or session will be at 2 p.m. on Monday. But we'll try that and see what happens. But I'd hope the members don't think that they're supposed to leave on Thursday and Monday also, because we will be having things on the calendar and committee meetings on Thursday and Monday also. There are any other items unfinished business? Announcements of committee meetings. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, the Rules Committee will meet at 2 o'clock in the Speaker's office to consider House Bill 509, which is the appropriation to the permanent fund, and it's intended that that bill will appear on tomorrow's calendar.
Representative Randolph.
Mr. Speaker, did you miss special orders, or are you reversing the order of things?
This is the order of events. Announcements of committee meetings comes first, then special orders.
Okay.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Resources will meet today at 3, and House Bill 205 will continue our deliberations on the oil pollution bill. Additionally, as a special order of business, because there are time problems with the bill, we'll be taking up House Bill 597 first. That's the supplemental appropriation for the Iditarod Trail race.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, the House Commerce Committee will continue our deliberations on sunset review of the Board of Marine Pilots approximately 10 minutes after adjournment in the committee room. Appreciate the members be there. We're going to try to finish up as quickly as we did yesterday on the last board rather than going into any more evening meetings. And tomorrow morning we will start at 8 o'clock in the morning on sunset review of the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. And under a point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out to another member during the interim, I have no problem with being called a jackass. Democrats have been called jackasses for 200 years.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary will meet at 3 this afternoon. Senate Bill 104, which establishes an intermediate court of appeals. And at 7:30 tonight, not 7 o'clock, as shown on the schedule, for House Bill 392, domestic violence.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Special Committee on Agriculture will meet at 1 o'clock this afternoon in my office.
Speaker, may we meet these?
House, please stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. Representative Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, because of the, I think, justifiable urgency of the Rules Committee meeting at 2, I think the State Affairs bills will be postponed till later this week. I'll notify everybody involved on that. But the three bills that are listed right here, we will not have a meeting today. And we'll take up these bills later on in the week, but I'll announce it when.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I have two announcements I'd like to make. One of them is the Subcommittee of Finance on Department of Transportation category of the budget will meet at 1:30, and the subject will be CIP employees. The next one is, Mr. Speaker, that for several years, the Ketchikan Daily News has sent the newspapers up here, and the editor tells me, the publisher tells me, this is quite expensive. However, that anybody that's interested would like to have a paper, they will send them up, as they do for some of us. And I Anybody that would like to have them mail you one, a copy of those, it's Box 7900, Ketchikan, 99901. And they'd be happy to send you a complimentary copy.
Representative Munson.
The Hess Committee will meet today at 1:30 on House Bill 603, Special Appropriation for the Women's Center. The House Concurrent Resolution 43 will be taken up next week.
Representative Branson.
Mr. Speaker, following the session, immediately there will be a short Republican caucus in the Butrovich Room.
Representative Brown.
In light of that announcement, Mr. Speaker, the Commerce Committee meeting will start immediately after the Republican caucus, which I hope will be as short as indicated by the Minority Whip.
Are there further announcements? Representative Van Hoosen.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to call members' attention to the House calendar. There, under announcements, there is a reminder here for people to attend the legislative reception at the State Museum. I believe there's a typo error. Instead of 30th, the 30th, it should read the 31st. And then, of course, there is another announcement there for the 1st of February for the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood are putting on a reception for that day. But tonight, Mr. Speaker, there is a legislative reception for those legislators who are interested to going to the Hilton Hotel between 6 and 8 p.m. And the Hilton management is hoping that many of the legislators will be able to attend.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I forgot to announce the van will leave for the pool at 10 till promptly.
And further announcements, special orders. Representative Smith.
May I have the privilege of the floor to talk about school spirit?
Representative Smith.
Topic seems to fit, but that's not exactly where it's going to lead. I used to be in a school that always had a good basketball team, and one year they weren't doing so well, so they started a new motto, that in order to win, you had to want to. So the motto for school that year was, you gotta wanna. And it worked. They wanted to enough that they went on to win the state basketball championship, and that's no small thing in Illinois. The same thing applies to the state. If it wants to win something, it has to want to. And I'm speaking in reference to the D2 issue. I don't know how many of you have seen this. This is the state publication for travel, for the Division of Tourism. Nice little cover, the Worlds of Alaska, it's 100 and some pages long. And right here on a double page coverage, it promotes traveling to Misty Fjords National Monument. Now it seems to me that if the state wants to win its D2 lands battle, that they're not going to recognize and promote a monument created by the federal government in D2 legislation, or as a result of lack of D2 legislation. I'm a little bit put off that while we're spending money to fight a lawsuit against the Antiquities Act, we're promoting travel to the very places that we say don't exist in our lawsuit. We've spent millions of dollars on this issue, and it starts out right here. Misty Fjords National Monument. This recently created national monument administered by the United States Forest Service, how can we speak with forked tongue and say it doesn't exist if we're going to advertise it? And I checked into it a little further because I thought, all right, the Alaska Visitors Association puts up an awful lot of money to support the Division of Tourism, and maybe this is all their money, so I better check it out before I do a number on the administration. But I found out that 69% of the budget for this particular package was state money, and that the text of this was completely approved by the Division of Tourism before they ever marketed this magazine. They've had two printings, and they expect over 500,000 copies of this to be mailed out to people who turn in little pop-up cards out of National Geographic and Reader's Digest. I submit to all of us and to the public that we aren't getting a fair shake with the dollars that we sent to the administration to fight our D2 battle. And I'm not quite sure how we go about changing this, since they've already got 500,000 of these things in publication. But I think it behooves us to take a close look and make the firm decision. Do we want to win this battle, or we do want to just give it lip service? Thank you.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on statehood.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you. I'll try to make it pretty brief. This year is the 21st anniversary of statehood, and I think it, particularly with some of the battles that are going on over lands, a lot of people are wondering, did we really achieve full statehood over these past 21 years? Are we a full state within the United States? And so a group of us got together last summer and started looking at the question of Alaska's status, not just because of the lands issue, but because of some of the other problems that non-contiguous states have operating within the federal system. And there are some people, particularly in my area, but other areas of the state that are proposing some pretty radical changes in the status of Alaska. I disagree with many of them, but I do think it's worth another look and a look at what our options are. As a result, former Speaker of the House of this body and the former director of our research agency and I put together an initiative to study that status, to look at Alaska's situation within the United States. Well, due to a number of bureaucratic delays, that initiative didn't get certified in time to collect signatures for this year. As a result, today, 19 co-sponsors and I introduced House Bill 644, which creates the Alaska Statehood Commission. What that commission would do is to look at Alaska's status and look at a couple of specific areas. First of all, the Alaska Statehood Act and its implementation, how far we've gone and how far we expect to go. Secondly, to look at other states and what their problems are with the federal system. To look at foreign federations and how they ameliorate problems between their political subdivisions and their federal system. And then to look at what Alaska's options are. And the purpose of the bill is strictly to study those issues. It doesn't advocate any particular course of action. I think after 21 years, it is time to take a new look at statehood, however, and I hope the body will favorably look upon this bill. On a different subject, for those who don't leave the weekend of February 15th, Saturday the 16th, the Arctic Chamber Orchestra will be flying down to do a special presentation of their Handel concert. They came down last fall and did a concert, and they've never been able to come down during the legislative session. So this year, the weekend that some of you will be going home, they'll be here presenting that Handel concert. Tickets will be available next week. They're currently being printed. We're pretty proud of the Chamber Orchestra, and I hope those of you that are here will be able to attend.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor just to give a little reassurance to Representative Smith that I don't think she has as much to worry about as perhaps she thought she did. Relative to Misty Fjords, I might inform the body that I don't think, for instance, anybody's ever accused the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce being soft on D2, if there's such an expression. And yet, as you know, Mr. Speaker, and Mr. Freeman knows, the Ketchikan community has been very supportive of Misty Fjords National Monument. Now, the difference is this. It's where the boundary comes. That's what the big fight's about. The people from your community, I gather, are at least a substantial segment, want the Quartz Hill and the molybdenum mine excluded. Senator Stevens wants it excluded. Some of the conservationists don't want it excluded for the battle. That's what the battle's all about. The community of Ketchikan itself sponsored a very well put together first voyage of the ferry Aurora into Misty Fjords, and got some nice national exposure. They had travel writers and everything on board. As a matter of fact, there were a lot of people on board that sailing, strongly expounding the very position that most of you expound relative to D2. So I just, I don't think we should probably get too worried on these, on every time that something comes up on Misty Fjords or something else like that, particularly in this case where the fight really isn't over whether there should be a monument. I think both sides acknowledge that in that particular instance, certainly not in all the national monuments we're talking about, but in that particular instance, I think there's general acceptance of the fact that there should be a monument there. The problem is, where should the boundary be? Thank you.
Representative Randolph.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor to very briefly speak about House Concurrent Resolution 44.
Representative Randolph.
This morning I introduced with a number of co-sponsors a resolution anti to the AgSoc proposal, and I also caused to have laid on each of your desk a letter from me and a couple of critiques of some of Mr. Kelso's work. We all know Mr. Kelso is the brainchild behind this so-called economic philosophy. I just think it's very important due to the fact that the legislation is pending before this body and that there also is an initiative which will probably be certified and before the people in November, that those people in positions of leadership in this state give some direction along that route, and I certainly intend to do so. I think that there's a great many people across the state who simply don't know what this is all about, and the very wide publicity and the paid signature gatherers that were out this summer, I think, left a very inaccurate impression with the electorate. Thank you.
There are further special orders. Representative Metcalf.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The members of the body, please take notice. I introduced a bill yesterday which a lot of people were interested in, but they didn't fully understand the bill and were therefore concerned about possibly co-sponsoring the bill. So this morning I asked Mr. Barrio's office to get give a synopsis of what the bill does. And it's laying on your desk, and if a lot of you take a look at it, I think you'd find it of interest. It's a bill that's long overdue, but I can go over it real briefly. On his second page, one, he points out, and it has to do with environmental suits, and it's trying to slow down frivolous environmental suits. So point one, the state must give notice of its actions whenever it is taking action, such as letting for a timber sale or anything of that nature that involves more than $100,000. If a person is to bring suit, he must show that he has a personal interest in that suit and is personally affected by that particular action, and he must otherwise post bond. And on from there, it goes into the responsibilities that anybody bringing a suit, which for shortening up the whole description, is frivolous, they must first post a security bond sufficient to cover the damages they might cause, unless they can otherwise show that they have a personal interest in that particular action by the state. And it addresses particularly only actions by the state in terms of letting of timber rights, etc.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move we stand in adjournment till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
There's no objection. The House in adjournment till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.